Free literature and AA books sold at cost are back behind us in the rear. We've got CD recordings of past Into Action speakers that can be borrowed from our library. We only ask you to return them after listening. At this time, I'd like to introduce tonight's speaker. Please join me now in extending a warm welcome to Jenna from the New Day Group.
All right. Hey, everybody. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Everybody that knows me from my home group knows I talk pretty loud, but if for some reason I'm not talking loud enough, let me know, because I don't know that I'll need this, Jake. All right, so my name is Jenna, and I am an alcoholic. I am going to start by reading the third step prayer, because that is something that I read every day, especially lately, and then I'm going to go ahead and start talking. So anybody who knows it by heart and wants to read it with me, you can. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always.
Amen.
So I don't know what's going to come out. I'm just going to start talking about my story a little bit. I'm not new to AA, but my sobriety date is fairly new. I just celebrated 8 years. So my sobriety date is 6/26/2015. So I just picked up 8 years a couple weeks ago. I took my first drink when I was 14 years old. And that was a long time ago, because I'm 52. So what I will tell you about that is I remember who I was with, where I was, what happened, and how terrible I felt. I was so sick, and I remember it was so bad that I just didn't do it again for a couple of years. But from that very first drink, there was a problem, and I knew it. It scared me a little because I was so young. So I then picked up drinking again back in high school and parties, normal stuff, you know, like normal places that a, you know, high schooler would drink. But real soon on in my life, I knew that I wasn't a normal drinker. I blacked out. You know, I often didn't remember things. You know, I had a car when I was 16, and there were many times when I drove home and threw up all over myself, like just not being able to, lapses in time, things like that. I ended up landing in AA for the very first time in 1990. My mom is sober 28 years, but she had gone to AA, you know, a few years before that, before she had gotten any sobriety time. So really, she was like the reason, that and a DUI that I got in 1990. But between that first DUI and my mom, you know, trying to get sober, I landed at a place called the Breakfast Club in Virginia Beach, and that was my first AA meeting. And then I continued to go to some other ones. And I stayed sober. I was 19, so I stayed sober for like a year at that time. But I didn't really do anything. You know, I just kind of showed up. I was young. I didn't really want to be sober. I was just there because the judge said I had to do it, and they would defer and drop my DUI. Because back then they did that kind of stuff. They gave you a chance. And I've had many chances. So I stayed sober for about a year, and then drank a couple years, came back, stayed sober for a couple years, relapsed, came back, and had a period of a 10-year sobriety. And during that time, I had hit what I thought was my rock bottom. I had gotten two other DUIs, so enough time had passed, but I'd gotten two other ones prior to coming back. And still, like, one of them was like 1995. Somehow, I don't know how, but somehow the first two I did not get convicted of. They like did a deferment. They did weird stuff back in the 80s and 90s. They don't give you those chances anymore. So I came back, I got to work in a program, and I got a sponsor right away, and I, you know, stayed sober and met my daughter's father name. I have a 20, she'll be 21 on Thursday, so we're gonna have to deal with that. But you know, I met my daughter's father in AA and stayed sober. And when she was about 8, well, I should say this. So I stayed sober, and at about 9.5 years of sobriety, I stopped going to meetings. I got, everything was good. I had a great job, finished, you know, got my degree, got my master's degree, you know, had a good job, everything was going right. And I thought to myself, I stopped going to meetings, and it was, I still stayed sober. But the first thing I did is I stopped going to meetings, I stopped going to my outside help. And eventually at like 10.5 years, it was like a year that I didn't drink, I ended up relapsing. So all of those 10 and a half years of sobriety, I basically just blanked out. I mean, I was mad. I don't even remember even to this day what I was really mad about, but I was so mad that I threw all my AA books away, like my big book, my 12 and 12, my Living Sober, like everything. That all the work that I'd done, like, it didn't matter, because in my mind, I was mad at myself, you know, and I just threw them out because I was like, I don't want any reminders. And I drank for 4.5 years, and I was very sick. And I don't want to tell you every little thing that happened, but during that time, those 5.5 years, excuse me, I got 2 DUIs. And the second one was 5 years and 2 weeks after the first one. So somehow I managed not to get like a year in jail because of that 2 week overlap. But I want to tell this story. I think that I shared it with my sponsor a few weeks ago. I don't even know what brought us to the conversation, but we were talking about like my story. And I think what, you know, in talking about my story, I think a big part of my story is surrender. Like, I try to practice on a daily basis, especially lately, because I'm back working real hard right now, due to, like, in sobriety. I had, like, a mental breakdown not too long ago, sober. So, I mean, things still happen when you're drinking, but when you're not drinking, things still happen. Like, life still happens, and I don't always handle it that well. Like, I'm just broken. I'm like that shell of an egg on a, you know, when you go to crack the egg, if something happens, just like there's all these little cracks and me just starts seeping out everywhere. But this happened to me, and this is, I can laugh about it now because it's really funny, in the rearview mirror. So the second DUI, the night before I had been drinking very heavily, mind you. I was a functioning alcoholic, but I was getting to the point where I didn't think something was gonna happen. Like, I was barely making it. I was driving to Newport News from Virginia Beach, you know, 5 days a week, drunk from the night before, drinking at lunch, stopping at 7-Eleven, drinking on the way home. I don't know how I didn't kill somebody. But the last night I drank was June 25th of 2015, and my daughter was young enough that she still had to have somebody watch her. So I got my neighbor to come downstairs, and I was getting ready, and I'm drinking like wine while I'm getting ready, and I'm like, you know, already half buzzed before I'm walking out the door, and I'm telling her, I'm gonna do it up big tonight. I don't know why, but I feel like this whole thing is like, I don't know how much longer I can go on like this. You know, I wasn't certain it was going to be my last drink, but I had like this gut something inside of me saying, it's almost over. You can't keep going on with this. I was very sick. I couldn't not drink, by the way. So I couldn't not drink or I would start to get DTs. So I was literally drinking in the morning and in the middle of the day at night. I was unable to not drink or I would get sick. And somehow I didn't lose my job yet. At that time. So I go to this party. It's my friend's husband's military retirement party. And it's down at the oceanfront in like this neighborhood called Shadow Lawn. So there's like all these like houses back there. And I was like 3 sheets to the wind, like within an hour of me getting there, because I had started drinking before I even left my house. And somewhere before midnight, I was like, I cannot drive home. So she put me in her husband's office. Like, you know how some of the big houses you walk in, they have like an office to the front? There was a couch. So she put me in there. I mean, I never called my friend to tell her I wasn't coming home. Like, so, you know, thank God my neighbor stayed with my daughter. And then the next morning, my alarm starts going off, right? And mind you, I work in Newport News and live in Virginia Beach. So my alarm that's preset starts going off, and here I am at 6:30 in the morning, waking up on the couch at the beach at my friend's house. So I quickly grab myself stuff, get myself together, get in the car. I am nowhere near sober, okay? It's like 6:30 in the morning. I am still so drunk. Like, so drunk that I probably was gonna need a drink, like, within a couple hours. I get in the car, I start driving down the street, and there's a street called 17th Street or Virginia Beach Boulevard, if you're familiar with the beach on that. And there's a 7-Eleven. I was like on Cypress, pulling up to 17th Street. There's a red light there, a 7-Eleven there. And I ran the red light. Guess what's across from the 7-Eleven? The precinct, right? So I completely run the red light. Don't realize that I've run the red light. Like, I obviously didn't run the red light on purpose. I'm just thinking, oh my God, I have to get home because my neighbor Candy is a nurse and she has to leave for work at 8. So I'm like, holy shit, I gotta get home. So I run the light and I'm going up Virginia Beach Boulevard towards a street called Bird Neck. I have no idea that there's a cop behind me with lights on. And finally I look up and he's like, pull over or whatever. So I pull over into this like Easy Mart or whatever. And I roll down the window and I'm already getting like my driver's license and my registration out. And I have like the littlest dress on. I'm from the party. Like I look horrible and I'm still drunk. So I roll the window down and he's like, whoa. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, license and registration. So I hand it to him. And he's like, can you step out of the car? And I get out of the car. And this was it. Like, tears were just, like, rolling down my face. And I literally said, you're going to have to arrest me. I can't pass your test. Like, with tears coming down my face. Not hysterically crying, but, like, the tears were just coming out. Like, without, like, me even trying. And he's like, are you okay? And I was like, I'm an alcoholic. I said, I don't know. I knew something was gonna happen last night. I don't know if this is what that was, but I shouldn't be driving. I'm gonna tell you that it's okay, you can arrest me. I can't pass your test. He was like, you don't even wanna try? And I said, I'll try, but I'm going to tell you right now. So here I am on the side of the road with like these flip-flops on and this little teeny like party dress, you know, trying to walk this straight line at 6:30 in the morning on the side of Virginia Beach Boulevard. And I'm like, he looked at me, he's like, you can stop now. And, and you know, bless his heart, he was the kindest police officer. And he said, well, do you want to blow in the breathalyzer? He's like, you don't have to because we're still going to go down to the precinct, but are you curious? Because I was being honest with him, and he was being nice to me. And I was like, he's like, don't you want to know if you're really seriously an alcoholic and you want to get help again? Do you want to know? And I was like, yeah, I guess I do. So I blew, and there was like a 0.26 at 6:30 in the morning. And he said, when did you stop drinking? And I said, I think I took my last drink like right before midnight. He's like, can you, and he just looked at me, he goes, Miss Ewan, can you imagine what your BAC was when you went to bed? And I was like, yeah, I'm sure it was well over 0.3 something, you know? And I just remember thinking like, I don't know why I guess because I was honest, he took compassion on me. And he sat me in the back of the police car, he didn't handcuff me, and he was like, we're gonna have to drive around for a few minutes and go on a couple calls because I need you to be like under a 0.23. Because he had already looked up my record. He saw that I had that one and he knew if he took me in front of the magistrate that she was gonna not let me out of jail, right? So when we finally, he went on, I don't know what he did. It's hard to blur, but he kind of like drove around, went on a couple calls, and we got down to the courthouse and I blew. I blew once, coughed, and so they had to wait like 20 minutes, and then I blew again, and it was like a 0.23, wherever it needed to be. And she wanted to lock me up. She wanted to lock me up because it had been like, she was like, well, it's 2 and 5. And he said, no, ma'am, it's 2 and 5 weeks, or 5 years and 2 weeks. And he kind of pissed her off. And I think because I was so cooperative, he saw pity on me. And I was like, she's got a daughter with autism. Like, she's been really cooperative. You know, she seems like this is it. And she just looked at me and she said, it's your lucky day. I don't ever want to see you back here again. Because she remembered me from before. It was the same magistrate. And my last name is not common. Like, literally, there's 4 people with my last name, and they're all my family, like, in this area. And I'm the only one with, like, 20 different charges for drinking-related things. So when you put my name in the computer at the courthouse, from the time I was 19 to, at that time, whatever it was, 44, I mean, it's all drunk in public, DUI, you know. One time I, like, hit my mom. So there was, like, all different stuff surrounding that. So that was like my come to Jesus moment when it came to my drinking. And I sat in jail for a couple of half the day or whatever till my mom finally came and bonded me out, whatever that amount was, like, I think $5,000 or $6,000, whatever it was. My parents got me out, and I immediately called a friend to take me to a meeting because I knew what to do. I was sober 10 years before, right? And I was like, I have to get help, but I need to go to a meeting. So I was starting to DT, but I knew I needed to go pick up a weight check. So the alcoholic that I am, instead of going to the hospital first, I went to a meeting. I barely made it through the meeting before I started getting sick and having withdrawal, like serious shakes and withdrawals. And I went to the hospital and they, you know, started a medical detox on me. And then I came back. And when I came back to AA, when I say came back, I mean I came back full force, like wanting to work and wanting to surrender my will and my life over the care of God that I already knew and understood. And what I'll tell you is during those times, and I'm sure most of you, if you've been around for a while, or even if you're new, when you have a period of sobriety, or when I, and I've heard this before when others have had, like, just because you stop, like, you haven't drank for all that time, your disease is still going in the background. Because when I picked up after 10 years, my alcoholism was far more advanced than it ever was before. Like, I quickly got to the point where I was drinking every day, all the time, you know, and somehow I lasted like 5 years, or 5 years and a couple weeks. You know, somehow I lasted, I don't even know how, it's God's grace. But my alcoholism was worse than it ever had been in the whole like 30 some years that I've been coming to AA and coming around. So just getting a period, just because you get some sobriety, if you go back out, I've heard and I know from me firsthand that it is worse. Like, it doesn't, alcoholism doesn't stop when you do. Which is why we're here, right? It's why I come to meetings. It's why I have to, you know, how I get a daily reprieve contingent on my spiritual condition. I only have today to be sober. And, you know, I do the best that I can today, so that I can wake up tomorrow and try tomorrow again. A lot of stuff has happened in 8 years. A lot of wonderful stuff. I met my husband a little over 4 years ago. Not in AA, but we just both happened to be in recovery and discovered it after we met. My daughter graduated high school. She has autism, so she's, you know, doing far better than I thought. You know, we've come a long way. We never would have expected how well she is doing. You know, I work at a good employer. Yeah, I have a home, a car, like food on the table. Like, my life is good. But stuff still happens. And I'm not perfect. So what I find, something happened to me this year, this well, past like 14 months, I had a heart attack in March of 22. And there was some other stuff that went along with that, but I became very depressed and stressed out between work and things that were happening in my life. And I just, interestingly enough, where you're supposed to go, I didn't. So instead of like diving back into AA, I kind of retreated. And I think that some of it was due to like after COVID, I was like pent up in my house. I was used to, you know, I went from working in office with all of these people to all of a sudden now we're all working from home. And a lot of stuff happened. And I became very frustrated, irritable, discontent, depressed. I was starting, and I wasn't working with a sponsor. You know, I had one, but I wasn't really working with her, and our schedules had kind of gotten sideways. But I realized, and it was like a come to Jesus moment in sobriety for me. It was really the first one I'd had during my sobriety where I became the person that I didn't want to be sober. And I hated myself. I would say to Bryce, I hate myself. You know, and I don't really hate myself. I love who I am. Like, I know in my heart that I'm a good person, you know, and that the sober me is like me. Sober me is me. Drunk me isn't the real Jenna. You know, the sober Jenna is who everybody knows and loves. But you can quickly, or I can quickly, fall into that skewed thinking. It's the alcoholic thinking. And I got scared. But here's the miracle. The miracle of this program is that I know enough about what I need to do to stay sober that I literally was scared I was gonna drink if I didn't do something. Like today, I have a healthy fear of alcohol. I do not have an obsession to drink. I do not think about drinking and put any, like I might have a fleeting thought, oh, about drink, you know, like a lot of us do. But I didn't have like an overwhelming obsession to drink, but I was scared. Like all I could think of is if I keep going on like this, I might drink, because this thinking got me nowhere good in the past. And so I went in and I sat in a meeting, it was like 2 months ago now, and I shared and I was like, I am not good. And this is what I love about AA. I don't remember exactly what I said, Judy was there. She's my sponsor. But I was like, I am not good, I'm scared, I don't want to drink, you know, I need help. I need a new sponsor, somebody with more sobriety than me. You know, somebody that's been doing this for a long time, somebody that, because I knew I needed to do some work, okay? So for me, I cannot stay sober unless I do the work. I can stay sober, but not sober up here. I mean, I was miserable, this poor me. God, he's a saint. You know, I was miserable for the longest time. And it was because I wasn't doing any work. And right away I got to work, you know, and did like a cleaning of house and started looking at things. And my sponsor had me do an exercise. And it is an exercise that I've had several sponsors in 30 years, but an exercise that nobody had ever had me do before. And I think it has helped me so much, and it's that asset thing. So we were doing like a four-step inventory, and I was sharing with her my inventory and my character defects and things like that. And as I'm sweating, you guys, sorry. As I am sitting there reading to her, she's writing down things. And she's like, she had told me, we're gonna make an asset list. And some of the stuff that she came up with, I was like, she heard, like, these are my assets. I'm going to read them to you because I think it's really important. Well, I'll read you my defects first. So in my defects, we came up with grandiosity. I was like, but she's right. Grandiosity, dishonesty, perfectionism, arrogance, ego, and pride. Those were like the main ones that we came up with. And then my asset list is like longer. And I was like, wow, this is really neat, because I had somebody listen to me share, and she helped me focus on like what the things are that are good about me. Because I was in hate mode. Like, I was literally in a mode that if I kept going like that, I would have probably picked up a drink at some point. You know, I mean, I'm an alcoholic. Isn't that what we do when we get away from the things that we're supposed to be doing? And I don't, my heart of all hearts, I don't want to drink. I want to stay sober, because it almost killed me. I mean, I had doctors telling me, you're going to die if you don't quit drinking. But these are my assets. Perseverance, self-sufficient, helpful, humility, creative, courageous, self-starter, dreamer, prepared, industrious, sensible, and dependable. Those are some pretty cool things that I could not see about myself, because I was so wrapped up in the misery of what I had allowed myself to become, because I wasn't doing any work on me. And then she told me, hey, well, every time you get stuck in one of these defects, we wrote it on the inside of my big book cover, you know, just try to focus on one of your assets. You know, get out of that. So I am working on that still. It's a work in progress. But it has been so helpful, and I've never heard of this exercise before, and so it was really a helpful tool, because I think that had I gone on, I mean, I would like to think that I wouldn't have drank, but as an alcoholic, I did drink after 10 years, so I knew that if I didn't get to work on myself, that the chances of me drinking were greater than me staying sober. So I've been going to I get a lot of meetings, again, now, because, you know, I've been withdrawn, so I'm putting myself back in meetings, we're going to meetings, I have a sponsee now, and, you know, I'm trying to involve myself and get myself back on track. And I have to, another thing that Judy told me to do is beat myself with a feather, which I hadn't heard anybody tell me that before, because I'm so hard on myself. Like, I'm so hard on myself whether I'm drinking or not. You know, I want to be perfect all the time. But there's no such thing, right? Is there, right? There's no such thing. Do you know anybody that's perfect besides Jesus himself or whatever God you may believe in? I don't know anyone. And so why should I expect myself to be perfect? So I'm still working on that. That's like a daily job for me, to not want to be, to not have to have everything done right. Because I'm an all or nothing person. You know, either I do it all and it's got to all be done right, or I don't do any of it. So really just trying to like find the balance in my sobriety again has been a blessing. I really feel like surrender is where I'm at. Just like I was that day 8 years ago when I literally surrendered to the cop. Like, he didn't have to do anything. He even said, he was like, are you serious? Like, I remember that, because he couldn't believe that I was just like, here, you don't have to do anything, just arrest me. Because I knew that was it. That was it. And that was the exact feeling that I felt a couple of months ago when I showed back up in such despair. Here I am. Take me. To my AA people. Like, take me, help me. You know, I need to clean myself up. I need to clean my act up. And that is such a gift That is a gift and a miracle of my sobriety, that I was able to see that I needed help. So had I not been sober enough, you know, so I was sick in my head, right? Because I'm an alcoholic. So if I don't work my program, I get sick again. You know, if I don't take my medicine and come to meetings, I get sick. Had I not, like, let's say I was mentally ill without sobriety, so I'm up in my head and I'm mentally ill and I'm drinking, I might not have been able to see that I could ask for help. So my sobriety that I had, you know, allowed me to be able to see that I needed to ask for help. And man, AA is the best organization that there ever was. There is nowhere in this entire world that you can go and walk in a room and say, I need help, help me. And people will surround you, you know, and they will carry you until you can carry yourself. They will help you get through it. And I don't know how much longer I could have gone on like that. I'm just so grateful that I didn't drink. I'm grateful that I was able to surrender. Surrender that I don't have to control everything. I cannot control what happens at work. I cannot control what happens with my daughter. I cannot control what happens literally at all except doing the next right thing. The only thing I can control is how I respond or don't to a situation. And I find it funny that I have to remind myself that, you know, but isn't that why we're here? So that we can remind ourselves on a daily basis that we don't have to be in control. That's why I'm here. I don't have any control, even as much as I want to have control, I really just don't have any control over anything. And I don't know what time it is, fellas. Okay. So I think I'm about done. I don't want to repeat myself, but that's where I'm at today. I'm at surrender. And I'm going to stay there for a while because not staying there just gets me in trouble. So I'll finish with this. Like some of the things that I do that I've been doing since, you know, I've reached out and got help and just kind of immersed myself is I'm doing the reading that I'm supposed to be doing that my sponsor asked me to do and working with her. And then anything that I ask my sponsee to do, I'm also doing. So I'm getting like a refresher as I'm working with her. So she's not reading it by herself. So it keeps me involved. I'm going to more meetings and I'm calling. I didn't call, like there was such a long period of time where I didn't call. So like I'll call my sponsor, I'll call my sponsee or she'll call me, you know, we'll talk. And just having the connections is what is helping me stay centered in my sobriety. So I think that's all I have. Thank you so much for listening, guys and gals.
Jenna. So our seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Money collected at this meeting covers rent and supplies for the group. The rest is distributed to our AA service entities. Special guest speaker right now. Jake's going to come up here and talk about step seven.
All right.
Jenna, thank you so much.
Thank you.
New Day was my my first home group. And you were in there. Thomas, Ralph was there. So a lot of familiar faces are in here from, you know, some of my first AA meetings. And you know, to kind of segue into step seven with surrender. steps, you know, it's a good idea to refer back to this previous step and then also refer to the next step when I'm talking about the step that we're talking about. So step six is a way for me to ask God to help me with my character defects. The character defects that I learned from step four and talking to my sponsor about it, and my sponsor told me, well, these are your character defects, look at this, you know, with step five. And then step six gives me the chance to, you know, by then I've developed a God of my own understanding, you know. I'm developing a discipline, you know, spiritual fitness, calling my sponsor, I'm going to meetings, I'm working the steps. And so I already kind of have this idea of who I'm going to be talking to, you know, to help me with my character defects in step six. And then when I get to step seven is another way to bring God in to help me with the little ones, right? So when, I don't know about you, but when I did step four and step five, you know, me and my sponsor, we used the seven deadly sins, right, to kind of identify what my character defects are. Everybody's got a different way of doing it. We did it out of the big book, and that's what we came up with. And so, you know, I was able to identify, you know, a pattern of behavior, my character defects. Which ones am I most likely to go to, which has helped me cause a lot of harm, right? In all my relationships that I've ever encountered, you know. You know, I was talking with somebody tonight earlier about how, you know, when I drank, I isolated. I isolated, though, because of my character defects. It was the drinking, but it was my character defects that made me want to isolate because I didn't want people around me, and they didn't want to be around me either because I had these character defects, and I drank like a maniac, and I was not pleasant to be around. So step seven, you know, step six is the big ones, you know, the seven deadly sins. I'm prideful, and I'm self-centered, you know, to the extreme. And then step seven is a way for me to identify the smaller things that lead into those types of behaviors, like the seven deadly sins. Because I don't always see that character assassinating somebody while they're not around as a way of self-centeredness and pride. I don't always see it that way. But I need you guys to tell me, I need God to help me with the idea of not, I used to be a technician, an HVAC technician. And so one of the things that I would do to make myself feel better is I would talk smack about a technician to another technician when that technician wasn't around, right? I'll talk smack about you at another meeting, right? Because of something that I may have noticed, you know? And so that's a form of character assassinating. So it's selfishness and it's pride, and one of the seven deadly sins is pride, but it's a specific action that I didn't really know was a major deal, you know, for me. And so, you know, step seven helps me with those things that I didn't necessarily know about myself. You guys help me identify that too, you know. I gotta talk it over with my sponsor. I can't be afraid to raise my hand and tell you who I really am, you know. But I don't become properly armed with the facts of who I am until I go through the steps, until I work with another man who's properly armed with the facts of who he is, right? Somebody who's not afraid to tell me you're a selfish a-hole, you know. Somebody who's not afraid to tell me that these little things are actually a little bit bigger than I knew. And so I get a chance to ask God, you know, and there's a step seven prayer as well. You know, I get a chance to ask God every day to help me with those little things. And every time a newcomer comes in and they come in and they start to do this thing, I get to find out, you know, from him as well, because I get to talk to him. You know, I call him up, you know, and I develop a relationship with that guy, you know, and there's a fellowship. You know, I got a handful of guys in here in this room right now that I can talk to you to help me with those things. And then I get to apply what I'm learning at home, right? Step seven is actually way more important than I ever thought. At first, step seven was like, oh, we'll say this prayer. Yep. I got to say this prayer before I call my sponsor in the morning. Because if I don't say that seven-step prayer, and I call him up and he says, hey, Did you get your day started right? And that entails, hey, did I say my third step prayer, my seventh step prayer? Did I get down on my knees? Did I read what I'm supposed to read? You know? And if I don't do those things, I get hung up. You know? Hey, did you get your day started right? Ah, I forgot to do the seventh step prayer. Click. Call me back when you do. Click. So then I get down on my knees, find a spot where I'm driving. Like, all right, seventh step prayer. You know? And that's how it started. But it was that little key of willingness. To be honest with my response, I could have said, I don't know how many times, I did it, even though I didn't do it. But I don't want that on my conscience. You know? So it started with saying that prayer. And then going to like a 12-step book study meeting. You know, that's a good one to help me learn what step seven is too. So step seven is very important. I go to it on a daily basis. And it's helped me to understand my, you know, the subtle little nuances of little things that I don't think are a big deal, but really are. And I get a chance to bring God into those and help me out with those. I don't have to do it on my own. You guys help me. God helps me. The steps help me grow closer to God. It's crazy how it all works out. Yeah. Steve, can you come up here and talk about step seven?
We passed the book.
Good evening. My name is Steve Roach. I'm an alcoholic. So one of the things we do, sometimes the speakers end up early, finish early, they tell the story, everything they need to say. And rather than just go home early, which we could do, but we only get an hour a week, right? So why not fill the hour? So we typically have somebody from the audience come up and talk about the step of tradition of the month. And so I've always felt that step seven deals primarily with helping me develop some humility, because I wrote this in my book that I personally lack a genuine humility. The purpose of doing that is to prepare me for going to start the amends list, because it says that I have to come at this from a very humble perspective when I go to make these amends. When I write down the 8-step list, it's easy to say, well, they don't deserve this or they don't deserve that. But when I make an effort, and Jake and Jenna touched on this in the inventory process, to me, it seems like that's like the linchpin of everything we do, is that inventory process. If we're going to progress and move forward in sobriety, right, to develop that emotional sobriety that a lot of our literature refers to. So in order to get to that point, the inventory is like the linchpin. And my sponsor, God bless him, man, the guy that gave me the keys to the kingdom, taught me how to do this right out of the big book. And we use the seven deadly sins like Jake talked about, because it came from the 12 and 12. Because I could list, 1,000 character defects, right? But he says, we're not writing a novel. He says, just use one of the seven and go with that. So that's what we did. And so by doing that, we did my fifth step. He had this little diagram thing that he did, and he showed me and like in a bar graph for what my character defects look like. And then in step six, I get to identify these defects of character and claim them as my own. And that's the important part. So it's easy to say, oh, I got a lot of pride, but I need to be able to identify how my pride has gotten out of bounds with God and society, and how it affects me in my relationship with other people. Because one of my biggest things is I lack the ability to form right relations with other people. I just don't have that ability until after I got sober. Now I can. It's fairly easy for me now, man. I don't have to be angry and mad at the world. I come in here, man, I'm happy-go-lucky. My life is good. I'm sober today. Why wouldn't I be in a good mood, right? But I wasn't like that when I got sober. And so by going through this process, and I get to that point in the inventory that when Bill and I would go through this, and he does this little diagram thing, and so now in step six, I get to identify all these defects of character. And step seven talks about the shortcomings. Well, what's a shortcoming? A shortcoming is, so if the defect of character is when my world is on fire again, right? When it gets out of bounds, whatever the characteristic is. So we all got the same characters. I think God gives us all the same. Kind of like God sheds his grace on all of us equally. Nobody gets any more, any less than anybody else. But in my case, I'm going to use an example in my case. Lust is pretty high on my list, right? Along with pride and sloth and anger. But lust was on there. And so I got just as much lust as it, but I want more, right? I always want more than my fair share. I want not just my wife, I want your wife too, kind of deal. Or my girlfriend, or whatever. So when my lust gets out of bounds with God in society is when I'm peeping through windows or watching too much pornography on the internet or whatever it is that I'm doing that takes it out of bounds with God in society. And I gotta learn how to, so the purpose of the steps is to teach me how to identify that. So if I'm asking God to help me with my lust, I need to know exactly what I'm asking God to help me do. And so the shortcomings, so those are the defects, the shortcomings, as the way my sponsor explained this to me, is the kindling wood that gets that fire started, right? So before I start peeping through my neighbor's windows, I'm typically looking at a magazine. Not that I'm a window peeper. I'm not. I'm really not. Just using this as an example. I really didn't go look at the people's windows. But I start looking at girly magazines, right? And then I start looking at things on the internet. And then I get real excited. And then my neighbor's looking good. And I'm going to go look through. And that's how it goes. So the shortcoming is the kindling wood that gets that whole defect of character going. And so by doing that, and in the process, I start to learn about myself and develop a little humility, because humility is an essential requirement to making good through the amends process. I have yet to make an amend that has gone horribly wrong. I made some that went sideways. I've had a couple, but none that ended horribly wrong. Oddly enough, I think AA members are the hardest people to make amends to, of all people. You think we should know, we're familiar with the process, right? But it's difficult. So I had a couple of the AA members amends that have gone sideways. Not terrible, but sideways. And so the key to the whole deal is I have to have God teach me and grant me enough humility so that I can come into this with the right perspective. Because it's easy for me to think that, well, he did more harm than I did, and he should pay me, and I really shouldn't have to do this. Because when I go through the process and I start to develop this little bit of humility, I get to set that to the side and make the amends as it's supposed to be. So step seven is a big deal. I'm a firm believer that step six, step seven, step two, most easily overlooked steps that we have, right? Because nobody really pays attention to that. If you read the big book, step six is one paragraph, step seven is another paragraph, and steps eight and nine are kind of melded together. And so that's why my sponsor, when we get to that part, when we got to step six, we opened up the 12-month program and started working out of that, because it goes into more detail. I used to be a member of a home group. It was a 12 and 12 group over in Portsmouth a lifetime ago. And I thought I could work my steps out of the 12 and 12 until we got to the fourth step. And man, that thing had me spinning, because there's like 1,000 different questions that are, and it just had me spinning in too many directions. And when I finally got a real sponsor who said, we're just going to work the steps out of the book, it made sense at that point. Because the 12 and 12 came 18 years later after the book was written, when Bill wanted to flesh out the rest of the steps. But in the fourth step, for this alcoholic, it just got too convincing, too complicated, and it just had me confused. So I hope this helps. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Are there any AA announcements? Steve.
We have another fabulous speaker lined up. Now I got to look it up. Who's
speaking? Mike Ferguson.
Mike F.
Mike F. Next week.
Speaking actually from the New Day Group. And also, the last Friday of this month, our very own Jake is going to be celebrating 8 years of continuous sobriety. So we're going to have a piñata, we're going to have pony rides, balloons, a Sunday thing in the bag, and there's going to be a special speaker together, Larry W. from Norfolk coming. And also, the last Thursday of this month, Mike K., Tim L., and Joyce K. are all celebrating, there's a lot of sobriety there, celebrating anniversaries at the Friends of BLW meeting over for about 10. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Check it out. District 24 is hosting a picnic September 30th at Portsmouth City Park. There's a picnic committee that is formed. If you're interested in joining that committee or helping out, get with me and I'll get you in contact with the committee members. But they're going to have music out there. They're going to have things for the kids and the family. It's actually designed to, for Alcoholics Anonymous members to bring their families and fellowship. And there's going to be food provided. You can bring a dish if you wish. You do bring a dish or some drinks or dessert. There'll be raffles just going out. They're going to be doing some baskets where you can, people are going to provide baskets that have gifts in them, and you can raffle on those. And it's fully self-supporting, so bring some cash to contribute to that.
All right.
What's that date, Jay? September
30th.
Okay. Yep. And there'll be flyers, I think, in the next month.
Okay.
My name is Rob, and I'm out of Alcohol. I think September is the month for the picnics. I will home with the Little Day group will be having a picnic on September the 17th. And it's also family oriented. Bring your family, bring pets. I'm bringing Steve Roach in. But it's a great town. It's good. It's September 17th at City New Park from 10 to 4.
Great. Anybody else? So David doesn't know this, but David, would you mind coming up and doing the chips?
Yes, I will do the chips.
Thank you.
I am David, and I'm an alcoholic.
I'm David.
We in the Into Action group are involved with a chipping system that is similar with the various Alcoholics Anonymous clubs in the Tidewater area. And these are used to denote your sobriety. For starters, the only one that you can get with alcohol on your breath is a white chip. If you found something that you have heard today that you want to change your life, or maybe you've just relapsed and felt like you needed a little bit more encouragement, we have the closest thing to membership in Alcoholics Anonymous as you're going to be able to get. The rest you actually do have to stay sober for. Orange chip for 30 days of sobriety. Red chip for purple chip for 60 days of sobriety, continuous sobriety. Red chip for 90 days of continuous sobriety. Blue chip for 6 months of continuous sobriety. Green chip for 9 months of continuous sobriety. Yellow chip for 1 year of continuous sobriety. If you are from this home group, we have a nice array of medallions here. Very helpful. And I would like to offer, once again, the white chip. If anybody has found something here that they wanted to change their life. Thank you for chipping. Thank you. You're welcome.
So we at the Into Action Group believe that one of the important keys to long-term contented sobriety is effective sponsorship. If anyone here tonight needs a sponsor, please see me after the meeting. We'll make sure that you have one tonight. Home group. Into Action is a home group. If anyone is looking for an AA group to join, please see me after the meeting. And for those of you who will, please join me in saying the Lord's Prayer.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will.
deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Keep coming back. It works when you work it.
My summer tradition basket is up there. Feel free to contribute to mine.
Oh, sorry.
Every time we talk, it's so fun.
Hey!
Now you're good. What's up? Is everything all right?
Yeah.
I was just at the breakfast club yesterday. Yeah.
no problem.
We get a lot of new guys here. I love your college theater here. We talk about it. Because, you know, the other way, who wants to do it? It's so embarrassing.
It's that anybody from here will raise your hand, right? Anybody willing to be a sponsor, raise your hand, right? Remember, back when we used to pass on meeting directors, if somebody was new, I don't know when, it started about 15 years ago. If someone was back directing the pastor, I don't know anybody, and I was in a meeting, it's getting 30 minutes to see, right? This is 15 years ago. New guy walks in, and they did that, and I don't sign my name to this thing, so I put my number up. And you guys, and he slides across the table and says, there's some number, can't give us a call. That's freaking dirty, man. It's circumvents the process, because then I get to go to my sponsor. Man, I gave my number to three new guys last night. Let's put my number on the sheet, they don't even know who I am. That's why we do it.
I like it.
Put it on the post-it, boom.
Where's my ride? Where's my ride?
My left.
All right, I'll go next.